Bonjour et bienvenue à cette balado qui traite exclusivement d'éducation, de pédagogie et de didactique.
Je m'appelle Marc-André Girard. Bienvenue au rendez-vous pédagogique de l'École branchée. Alors bonjour, je suis présentement accompagné de M. Adrian Piccoli, qui est le ministre de l'Éducation de New South Wales en Australie. On va le rencontrer et puis on va pouvoir discuter un petit peu avec lui. Mr. Piccoli, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you. You are the Ministry of Education in Australia, New South Wales, which is a province.
Yes.
And maybe you could give us you could draw a little your background for us.
So New South Wales is a province of Australia, about 8 million people. My own background is I was trained as a lawyer and have an economics degree as well, and I've been a member of the New South Wales Parliament since 1999, so 17 years, and 5 years as the Minister for Education. And before that, I spent 2 or 3 years as the Shadow Minister for Education. So I've been in this space for about 8 years. I also have a constituency in Western New South Wales, so in rural and remote New South Wales. It's 100,000 square kilometres, so a big constituency in regional New South Wales. So a lot of the focus of what we do is about trying to bridge this gap in performance between regional students and students in places like metropolitan Sydney.
All right. Little question. You are a lawyer. You have an education. You have a economics background as well. Why are you the Minister of Education?
I don't see it as a prerequisite to be a minister, or certainly a good minister, to have been a school teacher or a principal. Because the role of the minister is not to invent policy. My role is a political role. We have a government, an education department, who provides me with advice, and I get advice from lots of other sources as well, experts in the field. The point of coming to conferences like you lead is not just what you hear at the conference, but the conversations you have on the sidelines about the kinds of things that you should do. So I take advice, and then we make decisions based on that advice. We test it with principals and teachers to make sure it's going to work or it's something that teachers actually want. But it isn't necessary to have that experience of having been a school teacher. And some would say that actually if you are a school teacher and you are the Minister for Education, you come with preconceived ideas. The same with doctors as ministers for health come in with preconceived ideas about medicine, about practicing hospitals. So I don't think it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't hurt you. It's to not have been a teacher. It's certainly not a prerequisite.
Is your colleague in health, as your health minister, your colleague, is he a doctor?
No, she's not a doctor.
Okay.
She's been the health minister for the same length of time that I've been education minister. So in those two portfolios, we were elected into government 5 years ago. We were re-elected last year. The health minister and myself as education ministers, we're two of only three ministers have kept our portfolio for the whole period, and she's certainly not a doctor.
And 5 years as a minister of education, maybe in Occident or in industrialized countries, it's quite remarkable. We had that little chat earlier on the panel that you were on, saying that it's pretty much a record in these times. Just to give you an example, in Quebec for the last 6 years, we had 7 ministers of education. You've been there for 5 years. What's the trick?
I wish I could give somebody advice on what the trick is, but there are lots of things that can bring you undone in politics, either internal politics, particular media attention. There can be problems in your own agency that are either mistakes you made or mistakes that you get blamed for either way. So politics is a very uncertain business to be in, but I would like to think the reason for my longevity is that we've brought the profession with us in all of the decisions that we've made. So I'm from a Conservative government. We're in a coalition, actually, a Conservative coalition government. and I'm on the more conservative, in the more conservative part of that party of that coalition. But in all of the changes that we've made, we've engaged the teachers' union, we've engaged the principal associations, met with teachers, met with principals, very much engaged them at the grassroots level, and asked what they needed rather than us telling them what they needed. So there is a lot of trust there, and I think what the Premier of New South Wales and other ministers and other MPs hear when they go to schools in their local constituency is that the government's doing the right thing in education. And that feeds back to the Premier, who can appoint or sack me.
Yeah.
He gets that feedback, and I think given it's positive and positive politically, that he sees that we're doing the right thing, so why change? But the real advantage of 5 years of longevity is it allows you to set on a path and keep going. And that also assists the profession to do what we want, which is improve student outcome. Yep. They know that every 12 months, when you have constant change, teachers go, oh my goodness, okay, we've just started something, we're going to have to change, do something else.
We were saying that it takes time to implement change, and also it takes time, you know, to see the results of that implementation. So in 5 years, maybe you are starting to see what you implemented like when you started.
Yeah, we are starting to see what Pasi Salberg calls small data. So mm-hmm. in groups of schools where we've tried a few different things, it now allows us to look at that and perhaps change, stop doing a few things. We can start now tweaking the things that we see are working to make them work even more effectively. And of course, we then want to expand that. But having that 5 years of knowledge about how we got to where we are is certainly very beneficial, rather than somebody else comes in, they've got to learn it all over, mm-hmm. they've got to develop those relationships again, develop that trust with the profession. It's been very helpful to have that longevity.
If we talk about the education system in New South Wales, what are the priorities?
It's really setting schools and teachers and principals free to do what they do best in a guided way. So provide them with advice. We give them resources, and we're fortunate to have a growing budget in education. So we are providing more dollars to schools. And what schools really want to know is what's the most effective way to spend that money? They want improved student results more than anybody, teachers, principals, more than the government, or as much as the government wants to see that. So it's about giving them that information about what's effective and in what context, and actually getting out of their way to a large degree. We certainly don't come in and interfere in the classroom and say, you must do this, you must do that. We very much sought to get out of the way and allow teachers to do what they're most skilled at.
Well, that's most likely a conservative way of doing things, you know, more less into the people's way, mm-hmm. to give mm-hmm. them more latitude, yeah. to do, yeah. this. If we go a little more precisely, for example, I'll give you like important topics in Quebec, and just maybe you could tell us how things are going on the other side of the world from us. Technology integration, how is it going in New South Wales?
We're at an interesting point now. A lot of schools have certainly developed integrated technology into their teaching and learning, but we're reaching a point now where there's a very strong discussion about whether technology, what's the limit? How much can you give students the use of technology before it becomes potentially an educational negative? So yes, used properly, but look, the key is always changing the pedagogy with the tools. The tools on their own are useless unless you change the way you teach and the way you use them. If you just give them to students to do whatever they like, that's going to be a negative. So there's this ongoing discussion now about what's too much technology. You know? Have we let students use technology to the point where they delve only in a shallow way into multiple topics, as opposed to delving deep into fewer topics? As you can do with social media and the internet, you can have a quick look at something, a quick look at something else, a quick look at something else. You know, is that what technology is fostering, or is it actually fostering students to go deeper into fewer areas, but much more deeply? developing things like reading skills, comprehension, collaboration, working together, problem solving.
That's mainly the topic of Simon Breakspear's keynote yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, you're saying doing less, but doing better.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
What about kids with light disabilities like ADD, ADHD, dyslexia? Are they integrated in regular schools? How does it work? And what are the challenges for teachers?
Yeah. So we certainly integrate students as much as possible into mainstream classes, and then provide the support for the school. You can't just say to a school, here's a student with a disability and off you go. We do provide them with additional support to do that, but very strong within the culture of education in New South Wales is as much as possible the integration of students with disabilities. We of course have profoundly disabled students for whom we provide special schools, and those schools do a fantastic job, but they are constantly looking to integrate, even if it's a day a week or half a day a week, integrating schools back into mainstream schools as much as possible for not just their education but their social development as well, and the parents of those children want to see that as much as possible as well.
During the panel earlier, we were talking about that in Australia and in other countries as well, that more and more youngsters or students in university were interested as becoming teachers. Unfortunately, it's not the case everywhere. In Quebec, it's a big challenge for us to be able to recruit teachers as among the best students in university. So my question is, how you make it? How can you, what are the strategies or your tricks to recruit good candidates to become teachers?
This is one of the things we've changed substantially over 5 years. So 5 years ago, there was essentially no entry requirement to get into university to do teaching. Essentially, anybody could do it.
Oh.
And I think that was the problem with the status of the profession. So students would say, I couldn't get into physiotherapy, I couldn't get into law, I'm going to do teaching.
Okay.
It was seen as a last option. So we've now introduced an entry requirement. So now to come in from school into university, you need to have achieved a score of at least 80 in at least 3 subjects out of 5 in order to go straight into teaching. And one of those has to be English proficiency. So I think the status of the profession is determined by lots of things. But one of them is how hard it is to get into university. Why do often people want to do law or medicine? Not because they necessarily love law or medicine, but because it's seen as the career of high esteem, because you have to have achieved well at school to get in. And I'd like to see that more so in education. We get a lot of high achievers who come into teaching, but we also get a lot at the lower end as well. And I think what we're aiming for is setting a high standard will encourage more high performers to choose education, because it's seen as a high status profession. But then we've done things, for example, now to graduate, you will have to pass a literacy and numeracy test before you can finish your university. So there's a hard entry requirement and a hard exit requirement. And we've seen this year, which is the first year it's really fully been implemented, a drop in some university enrolments by about 25 to 30%. So it's having an impact, and we'll have to see over the next few years whether that impact continues or not.
Two last questions. First question, what would school or education system in your country could teach other education systems in other similar countries in Australia, like Canada, Quebec, US, or Europe? And second question, what advice would you, as a veteran Minister of Education, would you give to a newer Minister of Education?
We're actually very focused on learning from other systems and other countries. Australia has very high regard for the provincial education systems in Canada. We look to Canada much more than we look to other countries, probably Canada, New Zealand, and the Nordic countries, really. But we share a lot in common with what I like about Canada is we share a lot of social and geographic similarities. Mm. Nordic countries are a different. you can't compare New South Wales to Singapore. It's a city-state, or some of those countries like South Korea and Japan. So we look very much towards, we look towards Canada and what you, and what you do here. But if I think, I think if we could, I think one of the advantages we have in New South Wales and in Australia is the way our systems are set up. We don't have school boards. So we don't have, I don't know how many there are in Quebec.
So your schools are independent?
No, we have one system. So in New South Wales, we have one public system with 2,200 schools.
Wow.
We have one Catholic system with 300 schools. And then we have independent schools. But essentially, we've got two very big systems. And between two of it, the two systems, it probably makes up 85% of students in New South Wales, in two systems. Whereas in some of your provinces, you have 60 or 70 different school districts.
Yeah, exactly.
So what that allows us in New South Wales to do is to spread the equity out very much more effectively. So we can offer in remote New South Wales, we can offer a teacher that goes out there, says, if you go out there for 3 years or 5 years, tough schools, remote, if you do that, then after that period of time, we'll give you a priority to get a job somewhere closer to Sydney or Newcastle or wherever else you may choose to, a more preferable location. So we're able to use the size of the system to actually make it more equitable. Our lowest SES or lowest income, or our Aboriginal, as you would call First Nations communities, that are often low income, are the most highly resourced schools in New South Wales. Those in the wealthiest suburbs are the least resourced schools, because we know what it costs to give every student the equal opportunity in education. So it allows us to do that much, much more easily than I think you can in where you've got lots of school districts. Now, that's just a historic thing that I'm sure will probably never be changed, but
yeah, probably.
But I just see that in terms of funding and whatever policy levers governments can use makes it a bit more effective to be able to, you know, in a bigger system like that.
So for what I understand, first of all, is your school system is learning from other school systems.
Yeah.
So that's the first, let's say, quality. And second, you give much more independence to the schools, and the funding is according to the socioeconomic.
Exactly. Yeah.
To finish, your advice to a new minister of education anywhere in Canada, US, whatever. What advice would you give him as a veteran, one who survived 5 years in the education system?
Well, it's to build trust with the people who do the doing. As education minister, I don't teach any children. It's the teachers who do it. If I actually want to have an effect in the classroom, I need the people standing in front of the students to do it. And if I'm there criticising teachers or criticising the profession, or making negative remarks about quality teaching, whatever, I'm doing a disservice to the people who can actually do the delivering. So I think it's very important to build that trust and maintain it. It doesn't mean every teacher is going to be happy with every single thing you do, because there are certain things you have to do, budgets, et cetera, et cetera. But certainly building trust, consult with stakeholders, unions, principal associations, consult with them, ask their advice. I think everybody wants to be inside the tent in education. People don't want to have things done to them. And I've got to say, more often than not, the unions and the principal associations give me the best advice, often give me better advice than the department does. And I take that advice, and I try not to generate any surprises. So if we're going to make an announcement, I will let the stakeholders know beforehand, so that they don't wake up one day and read about it in the newspaper. And same with teachers. But teachers don't want to read, my goodness, my, you know, working conditions are about to change because I read it in the newspaper. So, yeah, consultation, trust, and no surprises.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Minister.
My pleasure. Thank you. My pleasure.
That's so cool.